live and direct. You are tuned in to the Bro Diallo Show, Q4 Radio, AM 1680. Yes, it's been a long time. I shouldn't have left you with some Pan-African perspective to get pissed to. I don't know. Anyway, I'm back. It's been like a month. But anyway, we ain't got time to lay mint. Let's get the formalities out of place. Today is August, Black August the 2nd, in the year of your Lord, 2017. And, you know, I'm here to rescue y'all. We've had some tragedies in my absence, and I know I take responsibility. It's my fault, but, you know, I'm about to fix all this mess real quick, right quick. Bro Diallo Show, AM 1680, Q4 Radio. Yeah, I'm back. Still black, you know. January was our anniversary year. July 22nd. My son's birthday is also the first day the Bro Diallo Show aired. If you're curious, if you want to get all in my business about where I was at, I did some traveling. One travel was for family purposes. You know, I try to keep them family bonds. You know, we got a lot of people in the Pan-African community that talking about they're going to unite the continent of Africa, and they can't even keep up with their cousins and aunties and nephews and grandmas and all that. You know, so you know, if you can't do family, you can't do Pan-Africanism. And I know, and let me tell you, it's an effort. It's an effort. I ain't going to get into people's business because I do have some relatives that do listen. So I ain't going to name no names. But if you throw a rock into a group of dogs, the one that yelps is the one that got hit. So even though I ain't naming no names, because, you know, East Hills Village, we don't snitch. Yes, you do. Y'all was snitching. Every time the cops show up, they got everything. But anyway, we'd like to believe that we don't snitch. We keeps it real. But anyway, long story short, some of it was for family. Some of the traveling was for, we have some organizational stuff, you know, building. And every time I go somewhere, I always try to work in some organizational stuff, some Pan-African subversion of the dominant paradigm. So even though I was traveling for family to keep build and strengthen and expand and maintain familial bonds, I also got in some work, got in some important meetings and discussions and some plannings and some work. So anyway, it's been productive. I ain't been vacationing. I ain't been kicking it, you know. But then, in my absence, since I wasn't here to protect the black man, the black man is under siege from deceptive trans women. And remember that song? I thought of this. I need somebody who got musical talent, or even at least editorial talent. I want to take that song, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, right? And I want to remix it, right? Remember, it was that Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, right? Because that was considered like a cult classic movie where, you know, I guess people wanted to take the most absurd threat. All right, you know, and you take that song, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. And the reason that song is such a cult classic, because I think it's like the most absurd threat. You know, there's a lot of threats out there to humanity. But people get all like, what's the most non-threatening thing in the world? Unless you have an allergy, I guess. There's always somebody that want to throw off any type of analysis that you have, any type of analogy that you kind of make. There will always be some a-hole that will raise their hand, well, my cousin died from tomato. Okay, but I'm just saying, generalities. Tomatoes aren't that harmful. Speaking of which, the HF Garden, man, we're going to have thousands of tomatoes. So in another week or two, if you want to come through with a basket, we can hook you up with some organic, locally grown tomatoes. Anyway, I want to remix that song and call it Attack of the Secretive Homos. Attack of the Secretive Homos. You know, because black men feel, as I on social media, I don't really know anybody personally. That's what King Didi was just saying to me. I don't know these people that y'all be talking about. And maybe it's not that I want to neglect your cause, or I want to say that your cause has no weight or no meaning, but I don't know these mysterious black people, and I'm not denying that they exist. I'm just saying that my circle, the arenas in which I travel, the company from which I keep, just is not reflective of what y'all be talking about. Like I said, I don't know if it's me. Am I in some kind of Pan-African bubble? So these dudes that y'all are saying that are doing these things and going through these things and committing these violations and offenses or being subjected, it's like, wow, that's what people are going through out in the cold, dark world? And maybe, because I reject all that law of attraction stuff. I think it's utter and complete nonsense. But Amos Wilson gave a more scientific explanation about how your consciousness does shape your world. And if you begin, it's like people, if I tomorrow develop an addiction to drugs or whatever, my surroundings would slowly morph. Certain people that come around me won't come around me no more. Certain people that would want nothing to do with me would start coming around me. And my whole environment, just from my mind influencing my actions and my actions helping to construct the world. So it's not that I'm insensitive to what these brothers go through. And in the attack of the killer tomatoes, attack of the secretive homos, or attack of the secretive transsexuals, attack of the secret transfer. No, that's too much. You got to say attack of the secretive home. And I know there's a lot of you accurate, well-seasoned, well-educated people like, well, no, technically, I'm not speaking technically. I'm just speaking in terms of trying to demonstrate that the streets, the hood, the black community, black men, just the very concept of black manhood is under siege, apparently, because techniques and hormone and I guess gender reassignment, hormone therapy, and just, I don't know, the it has gotten so good that the man feels like, us real men feel like we can't identify a born woman from a trans woman. And so there's deception out there. So men are taking up arms and signing blood oaths that if they are deceived, they will kill this trans woman. You know, and I'm like, OK. And now they want to boycott the breakfast show, which is good to me. Come listen to me. You shouldn't be listening to that mess anyway. And my wife said to me, wait a minute, didn't Little Duval go on the show and say, why don't you boycott Little Duval? And I look at her like, how you going to boycott somebody? Don't even know. It's like really be hard to boycott Little Duval. What are you going to boycott Soul Plane? We already did that for non-political reasons. I mean, and so it's too hard to boycott Little Duval. So he just going to boycott the show he was on. But boycott, I mean, Little Duval has made, I think he's about to become the icon of the straight pride movement. Because he stood by and backed up his statement. We're so accustomed to punk-ass celebrities backing down and walking back what they say when they make statements. You know, where Nicki Minaj was accused of being anti-Semitic because one of her rap videos with Drake and Lil Wayne in it had Nazi-esque images. There were no SWATs because there were no Luftwaffes. There was no stormtroopers. There were no actual Nazi imagery. But the ADL and the Jewish community said, this has Nazi essence to it, a little Nazi mystic. And of course, she just melted and apologized, you know. And it's just on. We could just come up with dozens of examples where crass, offensive, hardcore, gangster keep it real black celebrities have crossed, not black, they diss us. Like when Monique was in, did Precious, and what's that dude's name? Another attack of the successful homos. Lee Daniels, when he did Precious, and Daniels did Precious, and when he was casting for the role of Precious's mother, who was a pedophile, and I mean, she was just one of the worst characters, like a freaking horror movie monster. And the problem was, in the book Push by Sapphire, the mother was bigger than the daughter. She was morbidly obese. So they were trying to find someone that was larger in size than Precious, because Precious was a big girl. And I know you progressive, like, she has a name, don't call her Precious. But I'm talking about the character. I'm not talking about the actress. So Precious' mother, they were trying to find an established actress that was bigger than this up-and-comer. Because, you know, you needed, since the star was unknown, you wanted to have, like, someone who was famous and probably perhaps someone who was darker. Because remember, in Precious, all the good people were light-skinned. Alicia Keys, Lenny Kravitz. So that show should be Last Night a Mulatto Saved My Life. I know, I'm being offensive. But I'm sleep deprived, I'm travel fatigued, and I'm a little Duval, y'all. If I say something offensive, I'm going to stand by it and boycott a show you don't even listen to. Fine. But anyway, it was a lot of our biracial brothers and sisters that were the heroes. I didn't write the script. I didn't cast the movie. You know, it was a ridiculous movie. But anyway, that's not even my point. You know, I'm saying some things I don't have to say. And I'll say them again if I have to. But anyway, when they put Monique, they cast Monique, even though they weren't looking for a Monique, because Monique was lighter in complexion and smaller than the star of the movie. And so they told her, in order to embody this character, you're going to have to be monstrous, because you were supposed to be able to physically dominate the girl and overbear, but since she's bigger than you, in size, she's larger than you. And since she's darker than you, and by that standard means she's more sinister than you, you have to even go further. And so Lee Daniels told Monique, if you do this role in the way we're going to set it up, the black community is going to hate you. The black community is going to be really mad at you for portraying black women and black people and the black family in such a manner. And she said to him, let them hate me. That was her direct quote. And then she went around bragging, like, I don't care about what my community says. I don't care about my community's opinion. I don't care about stand. I don't care. Say what you want. Let them hate me. Because she knew, even if the black folks hate me, white folks going to love this. And they did. And gave Oscars, just were raining, pooping out Oscars everywhere for Precious. And so she said, let them hate me. So when I say offend and stand by celebrity, we know when Stephen A. Smith was offending the black community, middle finger to you all. You know, he told black people to fall back like his hairline because he don't care. But then when Stephen A. Smith offended white folks or a white woman, he was like, I'm so sorry. So we're very accustomed to black people of stature, black people with name, black people of status taking strong, bucking out their chest when they cross black folks. But when they cross white folks, we're used to them crumbling like cheap stale crackers under an elephant foot. So Lil Duval said, if a trans woman or a transsexual woman, whatever, was to deceive him into having intimacy, sexual intimacy, then he'd kill him. I'm not sure what that would accomplish. I'm really not sure what that would accomplish. Would that, I don't know, punishment? I don't know. To me, if Little Revolve should probably be like, it would make more sense if he was like, well, if I'm deceived into having sex with a person that I have absolutely no interest or desire to have sex in, maybe wouldn't that be a time for like self-reflection? Like, damn, like you sit down and think real hard. Like, what is the very nature? Maybe my approach to intimacy, maybe my, you know, maybe my courtship standards. Get to know people a little better before you have such intimate contact. I don't know. I would think if I found myself waking up next to someone that repulses me, that I don't want to be with, I would probably go into more, that's just me though, I'm kind of a thinker. Like, well, I have to examine my life. As opposed to like, it's your fault. You know, I'm just out here trying to hump and sniff in behind and climb up on top of anything that I can climb up on top of. So it's your responsibility to let me know what I'm doing and what I'm about to get myself into. I don't know. I've been married for decades. So I'm for the most part safe from this stuff. So maybe I would be more sympathetic if I was out there still sniffing. But I'm done sniffing in behind, ladies. So, you know, I got one, so I don't know. Maybe I'm less sensitive. But my point is, everybody's took a position. A lot of you liberals and a lot of progressives and even some truly revolutionary people were like, we condemn Lil Duval. Can't boycott Lil Duval because we don't even know what the hell a Lil Duval is. But we know what show he's on. We know who Charlamagne is. We know where he be at. So we'll just boycott by, you know. But I didn't hear the statement. I didn't listen to the show. I'm not a listener of The Breakfast Club because I'm a hater. I also have a morning show that is not nearly as successful, and I think more people should listen to me. I think my content is more valid and more relevant. So it's pure hateration. I won't even disguise it. I don't even know why haters pretend. Not jealousy. Jealousy is something different. Hateration. Because jealousy means I want to be in that position. I don't want to go over there and be with them. I want y'all to come over here and be with me. Totally different scenario. So if I was jealous, I would want to be them. But a hater wants to be me and wants y'all to accept me and value me more than y'all value them. Totally different scenario. I am a keen practitioner and researcher in haterology. So you take my word for it. But anyway, I would suspect that, and people were mad, and then with just cause, because I'm pretty sure if Lil Duval went on the show and said, I'm in the entertainment industry, Lil Duval's been around for a time, and he's like, it's really hard to get good roles. And even when a black actor gets a good role, he's often paid less than his white counterpart. So and so I want to kill. So if I get a role and I don't get my adequate compensation, or if I am behind some type of production and I don't feel the studio is giving it adequate push, adequate promotion that they would if it was a white project, then I'm going to kill the movie executive. I'm going to kill the television executive. I'd shoot them. I'm pretty sure they would have been like, oh, hey, you can't speculate about shooting white men in power. You know, you can't joke. That's not funny. Or if he's like, oh, like Jay-Z, the Jews. The Jews run the media. Which, I mean, whatever. We'll deal with that some other time. But if he's like, I'm going to kill the Jews because they ruined it. I mean, it would have been shut down. That would have never gotten seen the light of day. So there is some merit to the fact that you can talk stuff. But again, on the other side of that, my thing is, he's a freaking comedian. And, you know, our jesters. Remember, the jester was the person who could say anything to the king. And the jester, the fool, the buffoon, would come to the court and make fun of the nobleman. That was the only person under that monarchical society that could tell the truth. And not just the truth of society, but their own personal truth. And so he would mock the king. He would mock the first lady. He would bring up all of the infidelity, the incest, and all that, the jester. And he then, after he says a bunch of things, he'll fall out or trip and fall to make himself look, you can't take me seriously. I'm a buffoon. I'm a fool. I'm a damn fool. You know? But if a regular peasant, if a regular serf, or even if a lower level nobleman was to say those same things, like the king is incompetent, the king is draining the, but if the regular nobleman was to speak out against the king, off with your head. Oh, sorry. Elbow bumped against the butt. Because, you know, I'm black. I do a lot of hand gestures, so I got to clear my space. So in modern, during the what they call the Renaissance and the Age of Enlightenment, Europeans sought to maintain that tradition, saying that our comedian, our artist, can venture into spaces we're not allowed to, can engage in things that we're not allowed, that everyday people can't, because they're supposed to either awaken us or put us to sleep. Whatever their role is, it's a special encapsulated role. Even in the U.S. Constitution, a bunch of rapists, pedophiles, enslaving, colonized, genocidal monsters, they even codified freedom of the press and freedom of art and speech into their wretched constitution. Because they said you won't be able to have real civil society. You won't be able to live and act out these Enlightenment ideas if, at the very least, our journalists, our artists are not able to just be absolutely say things and come from left field on us and say things we agree with but that we can't say, say things that we don't agree with but we should hear. And that's, you know, artistic license, whatever you call it. I'm not an artist. But, you know, that's the point. And then comedians also. So when, remember way back when, this is like 6 years ago, Tracy Morgan said, if I had a son and he was gay, I'd shoot him. And at the time, he was in a really show that white folks loved. I don't know if black folks got, but 30 Rock. It's show 30 Rock. I don't know if black people got with that show. But white folks loved that show. They were like, it's so smart. It's so witty. It was a lot of political commentary, a lot of social commentary, a lot of gender politics. And they did it with humor and grace and sophistication. 30 Rock was a wonderful show. And so Tracy Morgan was on this show. And, you know, yeah, he was, you know, hustle man from we remember Tracy Morgan. And he used to do Def Comedy Jam and he was on the My Aunt show. I mean, Tracy Morgan, like most of these successful black folks, come to prominence on the shoulders of black people. And as soon as white folks pluck them off our shoulders and take them from us, and they forgot they ever was with us. I don't know if Tracy forgot where they come from, but, you know. He did Saturday Night Live, and then he went from Saturday Night Live doing 30 Rock, doing white stuff. But every now and then, Tracy remembered his roots. So he's like, I'm going to go back and do these black comedy clubs, the black chitlin circuit. I'm going to still come back, even though I'm Hollywood now. And so when he go to talk to white folks, it's a different kind of comedy when you come talk to black folks. So anyway, he was doing some black stuff, but, you know, social media, got on the internet. Anyway, and before all of his white cast members, mainly Tina Fey, the racist, white feminist racist, got up there and said, I denounce him, denounce, 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 denounce. He was denounced. And they made him do a whole episode on 30 Rock where he's like, I'm an idiot. We're idiots. And where he was fighting for idiots' rights because he said some offensive things. And, you know, he felt that idiots, people can openly discriminate against idiots. He just had the man just tear his own self down. But he wanted to keep them six, maybe seven figures checks flowing, so he had to do it. You know? But when he did that, a lot of white comics, like, what's his name? Louis C.K. My wife likes his comedy. Louis C.K. and his show. She likes his show, Louis, I don't know the name of the show. I think it's Louis, because she said it shows, like, gritty New York. She says she's always watching these New York-based shows, and they show the glamour or the hard. And she's like, it shows the grimy underbelly of New York that only person who lives in New York could really come to know. Those pissy doorways all over through the city. Anyway, he came out and was like, you can't condemn Tracy Morgan. You can't denounce him. You can't demand that he apologize because the comedy and it goes all the way back to the court gesture. Somebody has to be able to say the truth, their truth, unpopular truth, or even promote ugly lies. That should all be protected in the realm. And if it provokes discourse in the greater society, fine. If it runs off our back like water off a duck's back, fine. Whatever the larger society does with it is up to society. But in this protected space of art, and comedy is an art form, they shouldn't. But now comedians are brands. They're like athletes. They're just like ball chasers. They get endorsements and pushing products and all that, affiliations and all that. So now they have to have squeaky clean images. It used to be, you know, comedians. I mean, Bill Cosby was like the first one, but it used to be, you know, George Carlin. You know, you expected comedians to be druggy, alcohol, and have messed up lives. Even Dave Chappelle said comedians tend to be miserable people and have miserable lives. And that's how, you know, they're able to make other people laugh, because they're able to look at things that we and see things in ways we can't. And the reason they're able to do that is because of their pain and isolation and whatever. It's an interesting story. But anyway, long story short, Lil Duval, I don't think Lil Duval is thinking about it that far back as being a jester or a person of who's able to say the unsayable, speak the unspeakable, as a protected tradition in European and Western culture that goes all the way back to the age of monarchs. I don't think it's that hardcore for him, but he does have a future. He should hook up with Umar and Irritated Genie and the Black Straight Pride movement, this clown, this buffoon, even though he doesn't represent, it's kind of like Trump. Just one that he doesn't really represent anything that they stand for, to claim to stand for in terms of African redemption, black consciousness. But this one little thing is enough to really get him some status. The fact that he's doubling down. But I mean, if not for threatening to kill this fictional trans person, would we even be discussing Lil Duval? And I went and looked up. I had to go look up the numbers about the number of the percentage of trans people, men, trans women, people who go through either hormone therapy, gender reassignment, or who get none of the chemical or surgical inputs, but just live as the other gender, identify as the other gender. All trans people in all their manifestation, at the highest numbers, they make up 0.6% of the U.S. population. That's less than 1%. And the 0.6, that's if you go to places like San Francisco or you go to places like Atlanta, certain communities in D.C., there are certain areas where gays, trans, queer people flock to. Because if you are LGBTQAI and you live in Wisconsin or Kansas City, Missouri, or some backwoods hick town. Most of those folks, a lot of guys that came up that I know that were artistic or gay coming up in the hood, they were the first people to get out. Whether it was through academics or the arts or just, you know, just packing up and seeking their fortunes elsewhere. And they would move to places like Atlanta where they could. So you look at places like that where, but if you go to most places, the hinterlands of America, The number of people who identifies as trans is as low as 0.03% of the population. And then you have to cut that in half because some of those trans people are female to male trans people. And so then when as far as us black men, the biggest threat to us, air quote threat to us, are the trans women who are attracted to men and that are, would assume, have gone through hormonal or surgical procedures or augmentations to where they could pass as female to the unsuspecting or suspicious eye of a heterosexual man, cishet man. And that's literally, it's such a small population. That's such a small population for black men to be walking around having debates about. It's kind of like when white people walk around talking about, black men, you're more likely to be accosted by a cop than you're tricked by a trans woman. It's just unless, and the only way you would have to take direct steps to increase your chances, like move to Atlanta. And then after you move to Atlanta, you will have to start frequenting the clubs or the Vogue step shows or whatever the things, those ballroom dances, you'd have to pretty much set yourself. You have to set up your own trap before you can get caught in it. It's just not a background thing. And because even with, you go down to the trans women who can pass as biological women, then you have to say, of that number, how many of those are even interested in men or even interested in deceiving men? Unless you say, let's say 100% of all trans women, 100% of them engaged in this. I'm going to try to deceive and trick a man into thinking that I am a biological or born woman and trick him into having intimate or sexual contact with me. Even then, if all of them had that intent and they spent 7 days a week, they didn't work, they didn't sleep, all they did was put on makeup, put on push-up bras, adjust their wigs, and head out into the streets to trick you. Then you got dudes like me who are married. Even the vulnerable population, which is the population of men that are going to have sex with a woman whom they don't have enough contact, enough knowledge or awareness of, they're even that's a small population. Right? So it's just like the number one, it's not a threat. It's not a threat. But even the threat, I have to say threat because I don't have a better word. I don't have the vocabulary. I'm not Trump. I don't have the best words. Trump says he has I have the best words. Sometimes I don't even have the words for things. I'm sure if I had time. This is off the dome. So, I mean, I'm just saying that if we really examine this threat, because if there is a threat, and you really want to address the threat, the first thing you have to do is gather intelligence. Before the U.S., as warmongering as the United States is, they don't just go in guns a-blazing. Now, they do go in guns a-blazing, but they always proceed by collecting intelligence. They have to study the terrain of the nation they're going to be invading. They have to study the culture and the mores of the people they're going to commit genocide and rape and pillage. You got to collect intelligence. So I'm like, I'm a cishet man. I'm a manly man. I'm a chest-thumping, knuckle-dragging, macho man. So I ain't about to get tricked. So I did a little research on the enemy, air quotes. And I'm like, wow, this is a non-threat. This is really a non-issue. It's a non-issue. It's absolutely a non-issue for the average black man. And I'm telling you, if you get trapped, it's such a rare an unlikely scenario, but you would think that behind every dark corner, in every alleyway, in every strip club, you know, in every little finger swipe on what's that called, that thing? Do people still do that? What's the name of that app where they swipe to get people? Tinder. And every Tinder swipe, you know, in every, standing on a bus stop, sucking on a lollipop, everywhere you look, everywhere a horny black man emerges and dwells. There are there are these trans women, you know, or as, what you brothers call them, gays, I don't know, if they're gay, I'm going to have to get some gender studies major in here to unpack this. Because I know I'm crossing every line. Be offended. You have my permission. I'm offending myself. But I just hope you get my point. On top of your under, over, around, wherever, as long as my point comes across with you being offended, then I can live with your offense. Anyway, I say like Simone, let them hate me. And then she got mad when people actually started hating her. That makes sense to me. Anyway. It's just not, it's brothers, and just the brothers, you manly men, knuckle dragging, you know, football ball chasing, men, brothers. Let me tell you, when you list the threats or potential threats to black men and black manhood, being tricked by a trans woman, and I know a lot of these cats, I know a lot of these dudes that are part of like the black straight pride movement. They live in places like Atlanta. They go to places like 90% of the gay content that I see on social media in the black conscious circles. It's posted by anti-gay people. Let me state that again. The majority of, it's like the same thing with this whole hood mentality, ghetto mentality, street. Most of the hood fight videos, most of the ratchet content that I see posted and shared and circulated is posted and shared and circulated by people who are denouncing it. Like, I would be unaware of a lot of this stuff if not for the people who are trying to denounce and do away with it. We need to stop this. You need to stop it. I'm dead ass. I'm not, you know, I just got back from New York, so I'm going to be saying things like word is bond, dead ass. If you call in on the show, I might call you son. You know, sorry, I just got back. I'm trying to purge my West Coast contamination, but it's here for now. So yes, I did say dead ass for you who caught it. But it's just not, and the fact that we give so much energy, me included, because I'm giving a lot of time to this issue, that it's just not a thing. It's not a thing. And why are we making it a thing? Because oppression is compounding. Whenever a group of people are oppressed, you have two choices, because you're going to lash out. You either go at the people who are oppressing you, or you find another vulnerable group to heap your issues on. So Lou Duvall can't go on the Breakfast Club and talk about the white man, talk about multinational corporations. He's trying to get put on. Because Charlemagne, don't look this up, don't go buy this book, but Charlemagne wrote a book called Black Privilege. And I want, so these Negroes are trying to get put on. They want to find a white. They want their own Jimmy Iovine. They want their own white man that's going to take them. They want to be with Warren Buffett, like Jay-Z, sit across from Forbes and Buffett. They want to be up there. They want to sit on white daddy lap. You know, these same dudes that will kill a black trans woman will do a lap dance for a rich white man if the check clears. You know. So tell me what's up. So they're not going to go on and denounce the power structure. They're not going to do that. They're not going to diss the institutions, the multinational corporations that allow them to be the celebrities that they are, allow them to publish the books. You know, Charlemagne's on MTV. Charlemagne's everywhere. Charlemagne de God. This is a really stupid name. I don't. Anyway, so they want to get put on. So if you can't attack the people above you, you're going to either do self-destruction, self-mutilation, you're going to abuse, you're going to destroy yourself, or that oppressive pressure, you know, is going to, you got to have an outlet so you can target people more vulnerable than you on the social strata. Women, youth, gays, poor, immigrants. So you find when the people in power give you trouble, when they hurt you, you're going to lash out against people who can't lash out back. And that's the cascading scale. It's called compounding oppression. Oppression always compounds. So I'm the man of the house. I come down on my woman. My woman, she can't whoop me. She ain't about to jump on me because I'm a man. I'm stronger than her physically. So then she come down on the kids. And since my son, he can't come down on his mother, then he gonna come down on his younger brother. And the young and then my youngest son, he's hurt, he's upset, he's angry, so he kicks the dog, and the dog bites the cat, and the cat scratches the gerbil. That's oppression. That's how it goes. It cascades down. The only way to stop this cascade, the only way to stop this cascade is to send that pressure that comes from on high, send it back up. Send it back up through the pipeline to reverse the flow. But that's harder to do. But it's more effective in the long run. So you'll find a lot of black men, especially a lot of black men of status, a lot of black men of stature. They're very critical. Sagging pants, single mothers, on welfare, ignorant black people. They have all these strong principled stances against these people who really have no power. And let me tell you, individual personal power problems, they can come from you. But any problem that can be defined as a social problem, a social ill, you need social power to make a social problem. You need social influence to make a social and to sustain and create a social problem. All of our societal problems, none of them come from that crackhead panhandling. Let me tell you something. Welfare cheats don't create the problem. It's the policymakers. It's the elites that make social problems. You need social power to make a social problem. And so a lot of us will not deal with the societal problem, the institutional problems, the structural problems. We'll deal with individual or community or even neighborhood-based issues because we think, number one, we can grasp it intellectually. And the people we can blame for those problems. But the problem is, with that, those aren't core problems. Those are symptoms. Those are byproducts. Those are offshoots. But that's a positive, because if you're a scallywop, if you're a no good little liver sap sucker who wants to pretend that you want to solve problems, but you really want to profit from problems. And it's a different thing, because we got leaders in Chicago right now who've been claiming to address problems for the last 50 years or more. Who've been saying, Jesse Jackson sneeze, Rainbow Push sneeze. You got entities in my own community who said we're here to address a specific problem. And that problem over the decades, give me 40 years on any problem. Give me 40 years and millions of dollars and thousands of followers. Give me 1/10 of what y'all give to them and let me work on any problem for 50, 40 years. Come on, with resource. And these men have been given run for president. I mean, give me them resources. And if I can't do something and make headway on the problem in 5 years, in 1 year, take me out of that position. We need to give black leaders performance reviews, damn it. But anyway, my point is, if you claim to want to solve a problem, or the person is in a position to address a problem or claims they're down to fix a problem, but that problem gets perpetually worse, that means they're not trying to solve the problem. They're trying to profit from the problem. And profiting from a problem often on the surface looks just like solving a problem. But the only difference is, when you want to profit from the problem, you only address and attack the symptoms of a problem. When you want to cure a problem, then you have to go to the root of that problem. So if Umar says he wants to fix something, right? And he has gay conversion therapy or whatever. You know, for every gay person, he gets to drink a draft beer and go to a football game. I don't know what makes you a man. I don't know what the standard for manhood is. But whatever. He turns a non-man into a man. There's going to be more men coming up, gays or whatever, because he said that the system, the institutions of the society, are making us gay or whatever. And just if you look at his theories, not that I agree with it, I think it's utter nonsense. But by his own analysis, he's only dealing with the symptoms. Single mothers, trifling niggas that only give him $700,000. You know, he's only dealing with the symptoms. By his own analysis, he's not even getting close to the root. He doesn't even have a plan for addressing the root. In fact, he's trying to integrate with the root of the system. But that's fine, because when you're dealing with the symptoms, the people who are the byproducts, who are the determined outcome of a core problem, they don't really have the power to fight you back. They don't really have the influence to fight you back. And even when they do attack you, it a lot of times can reinforce you. So when, like, Trump goes against immigrants and immigrants attack Trump, and it further strengthens his support base. Or like when single women go after Umar or Tariq Nasheed. I almost said Tariq Ali. Go look up Tariq Ali. If you need to follow a Tariq, if you need to follow the research and teachings of a Tariq, go to Tariq Ali, not Tariq Nasheed. Me. When single women attack them, then it further bolsters their base. Yeah, see, you said these single mothers wasn't no damn good, and now they coming for you. And now they're trying to see they bitter. They angry. You were right. Everything you said is validated because look how they responded to you. Ignorant hoes. Or when you attack gays and then the gays showed up and protest. Yes, the gays are taking over. And then the gays show up and say, we're not taking over. Oh, you just took over our meeting. I knew it. And so it's kind of a catch-22 by the oppressed or the people lower rung. You know, and it's a mess. But the main problem is you have to ask yourself, do I want to attack and address symptoms or do I want to deal with core problems? And how did they go all the way back to this whole, there's the trans women tricking black men into having sexual relationships with them. I think what's a bigger issue is that men who actively pursue relations or intimacy or sex with trans women lying, saying when they get caught, I was tricked. Name a time when a public figure or just some around the way cat that you knew himself say, hey, I'm here to announce that last night I slept with a trans, a he, she, or whatever, a gay. I got tricked. Right? A fag tricked me. Right? They never announce it on their own. They always have to announce it after they're exposed or caught. So, you know, a disgruntled girlfriend, there was some dude that was on social media, and he was a conscious black dude, and he had an internet where he would make these really elaborate onks and African handmade wood carvings and jewelry and sell them online. And on top of that, he was a revolutionary boom, boom, boom. And he had a black woman, pro-black couple. But he used to like to go on, what was it? I don't know, Backpage or something, and go after trans women. Or even just gay dudes, effeminate gays, twinks or whatever, and have liaisons, little hookups. And apparently the woman knew about it. And the woman had been compiling information about it throughout their relationship. And then they fell out. And so after they fell out, she revealed the info. And then when she revealed the info, another dude who had beef with this, because this is all kind of little petty beefs, little petty squabbles. As Boots Riley said, if we had as much funk, and by funk he meant hostility, animosity. If we had as much animosity for our oppressors that we have amongst ourselves, you know, we'd be free already. The blood would never flow again. I'm sorry I brutalized that line, but you get my point. So a lot of times, people, like, I was tricked after you get caught. You can't announce being tricked after you get caught. You know, and I don't know why we out here catching. Let me tell you something about sex in general. Of all of our activities, human biological activities, sex is probably something we do the least. We sleep more than we have sex. We eat more often than we have sex. We walk. We dance. We talk. If you look at all actions that we do with our anatomy, our hands, even take the biggest freak. It's just we don't do sex. I mean, we eat more and breathing, eating, things that we do that are more crucial to our, like, sex is primal. You know, I think it's primal. We're going to be having sex until it's going to happen. And however, like marriage and relationships, that's political. That's all political, cultural, heritage, and all that. But you take all that away, sex is primal. We try to tie sex in with all this high-minded stuff. And generally, the more high-minded you go with sex, generally, the more uppity people are about sex, you'll look behind the curtain, and they tend to be the biggest freaks. I don't know how many more conservative Republicans or revolutionary warlord, black nationalist warlords got to get busted doing, or righteous, pious, holy men, black preachers, black prophets. How many more of them got to get busted before we just accept? Listen, more likely than not, if you're some tyrannical anti-sex person trying to control and dictate the terms and conditions of sex for other people, if you're that, more likely than not, you're the freak of the week. you got a dungeon with whips and chains. You doing something. And hey, I'm just making an observation. I'm not even making a judgment. I'm just saying how many more times they got to get caught with they finger in the plum. I don't. So let's see. Let's just sum all this up because I want to move on. Number one, black people out here trying to protect us from the secretive, it's just not, it's a non-issue. It's a non-issue. We can conclude that it's so rare. It's such a rare phenomenon. It would be akin to us putting resources in the black community to prevent lightning strikes and taking resources that we have from education, from economic development, taking resources from protecting young girls from sexual predation, taking resources from real problems and putting it to problems that damn near don't exist. It's like some Iowa town had wrote a bill banning Sharia law, saying that Sharia law can never come to Iowa. It's like when you put resources, and we are in such dire straits as a people, we really don't have time for non-threats, to elevate or make non-threats a thing. It's not a thing. It's not. I'm sorry. And if it was a thing, believe you me, I looked at the numbers. I looked at the occasion. And here's the reality. Transgender people have more to fear from heterosexual, cisgendered, line-walking, straight-laced, normal people than we have to fear from them. That's the bottom line. Because they're such a small, even if they all came out to do all the horrible things you think they do, it's not enough of them to really make a real impact. So if you're saying my relationship, my ability to form a family, my ability to reproduce and save and build the black race, if you're saying that trans people are in your way, somehow obstructing or disrupting what you're able to do, you're a damn liar. They just don't have the power. And yes, you'll see them on TV now. Orange is the New Black, that Laverne Cox. Yes, they're more visible. But that does not translate to on-the-ground real power. Yes, the rhetoric. Because black folks are visible as hell now. We're on TV like we never was before. In the 60s, we fought a whole civil rights movement. And visibility don't mean a damn thing. It does not translate to power. Black folks should know that. Every time I look, it's this gay stuff. I see this gay stuff on billboards, and they got two men kissing on a billboard. Bah! Gays are taking over. If simple visibility meant taking over, black folks would rule America. We all on the TV. We chasing balls. We singing songs. We running away with Grammys and Oscars, and we was president of the United States. There were millions of pictures taken of Obama and spread all over the internet. Y'all masturbate to Obama porn every day. Political masturbation, not physical. Sharing pictures of Sasha and Malia. Y'all was talking about y'all want to make one of the Obama girls' birthdays a holiday. We don't celebrate the 4th of July because one of the Obama girls were born, and we're going to celebrate a Malia Day. And black folks is visible as hell. Just us normal black people. Us line-walking or pure and godly black folks. We're everywhere. Does that translate to power? Does that translate? Can we get on the phone to Congress, to our local state officials, to our bureaucrats? Can we call up CEOs like, listen, I was visible. They had black folks all over the TV. So I want to dictate some policy and I'm going to bring some resources to my people. That don't mean a damn thing being visible in Western media. So, yeah, the LGBTQAI people are more visible. Yeah, Disneyland has a gay day. And when Pride Week comes, you go to Target and they have a whole Pride section. Rainbows everywhere. Yes, Facebook has a rainbow emoji or some nonsense. But let me tell you something. That don't mean a damn thing. And then y'all idiots want to fight. Why don't Facebook do a RBG emoji? Shut your ass up. You want Disney to do a Black Panther Day? You want your damn... Well, I guess the Disney does literally own Black Panther now. But I mean the Black Panther Party, not the Black Panther comic book character. Like, I mean, come on, recenter, my people. Come on, do it. Let me just let's recenter ourselves, black folks. We don't have the time or the resources to be going in on stuff that ain't a problem. And I know Umar raised $700,000 promoting a non-problem and protecting us from a non-threat. So I know how profitable it is. If I came on the air and said reptiles, humanoid reptiles, and the gay mafia, and the Illuminati, and all this stuff is what's getting us, I'm sure I would be a lot more popular. I have a lot more listeners and viewers. I'm pretty sure of that. But I keeps it real. And keeping it real does go wrong. Chappelle told us that a decade ago. I keeps it real. And if something is not a threat. And let me tell you, homie, brother, if you're repulsed by gays, more power to you. You have every right to be repulsed by whatever repulses you. I'm telling you. But you don't have a right, because something repulses you, to identify it as an existential threat to the race. You can't use that as, you can't turn that into your launch pad for your black revolution. You can't define reality based on your taste and preferences. Reality is reality. You know? And that's for things you don't like and things you do like. I love peanut butter cups. Vegan, organic peanut butter cups. Justin's. Big fan of them. Right? But I can't go around saying peanut butter cups are salvation or the solution, because I like them. I might have to say, hey, this thing I like is not very healthy. It's not something I should be promoting. Something I should even maybe regulate within my own self. And this thing I don't like isn't the end of the world. You know? And so what attracts you, what opposes you? Yeah, we're all people. And I think that people should be able to say, hey, I'm not with that gay stuff. I'm not gay. But you can't say, so then let's kill the gays. Let's shun them. Let's deny them housing, opportunities to work. Oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. How do you get from one thing to the next? There's people I don't like. I don't tend to get into people's bedrooms. If it's consenting adults, you know, I've gotten over that. Because, and I can tell you my journey, because I was there. I was with the straight, there was no straight pride movement. But I was like, yeah, the gays are wrong. You shouldn't be gay. Every man should be a man. I was there too. Man, I'm like, why do I want gay people to not be gay no more? What the hell does that do to me? And how would it say, I mean, what? But anyway, that's a different discussion. All I'm saying is, forget about it, whether you think it's right or wrong. Is it a threat? Is it a threat to the black family? Because dudes are out here saying gays means that it's genocide, global warming, ecosystem disruption, nuclear proliferation, Fukushima. That's not a threat. The Anthropocene, you know, the sixth or seventh mass extinction. None of that's a threat. A threat is man pon man. Man pon man, that's a threat to our existence. And let me tell you something, sister. If a man is in the bed with you and he can't do his thing because out there somewhere the gays are gaying it up, and he said, oh, the gays are a threat to the black family, I can't be with you, be a husband or to you or a father to your children because of the gays. He's one of the gays, I would suspect. It just doesn't make sense. I don't know how 0.6% of a population can disrupt literally 99% of the rest of the population. Literally 99% of people are not trans. Literally less than 1% of the gay, even amongst the gay population, people who identify as gay, queer, lesbian, amongst them, the trans people are a small minority. And they get so, and so if you really want to shoot somebody to, in order to, I can give you a list of shooters. I won't give you a list of people you should shoot. Achoo, Coke brothers, achoo. I'm not going to give you a list of people you could shoot, you know, in order to assert your manhood and your power. I'm not going to give you that list over the air. Okay? But there are people that you could go shoot to really, like, set yourself off. And you know, you don't shoot trans people. It really is not going to really accomplish anything. And then, you know, so that's that. Let's go to some music. Today's James Baldwin's birthday. Oh, God. I didn't line this up, y'all. I swear. Happy birthday to James B. But I'm back, y'all. So I'm about to play Return of the Holy One. Because the Holy One has returned. Because I'm back. It's been a long time. But I'm back. Thank you for being back with me. Bro Diallo Show. AM 1680 Q4 Radio. This is YZ, the Return of the Holy One.
It's the return of the Holy One, return of the Holy One. Abusive mental pictures, voodoo using dead of guns. Put soldiers all over orphan soldier. Some niggas known as Sliver, but I'm not a cobra. Though I'm king in the dawn, so come on while I'm warm. I'm headed for the colleges and headed for the dorm. The classes loaded by the masses. Some need a loaded pistol, so they did it and they ready. Ready is that finally, so why you timing me? Some said, Z, come out before it's too late. Then I said, God works in mysterious ways, and he's always on time. Then they gotta chill up the spine. They waited for the day for me to come back again. Ran home to tell her family and girlfriend. And just when they thought like we could cut short, I heard it and came so they wouldn't feel deserted. It's the return of the Holy One, 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 return of the Holy One. The Holy One is finally returned. Yes, it's the return of the Holy One, 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 return of the Holy One. The Holy One is finally returned. Yes, check it out. You don't stop, a YZ. You don't stop, a brother job. You don't stop, a 720. You don't stop. Mostly, niggas don't approach me closely, cause I rock heads. I'm living close to the edge. Ease back, I don't trust you, might push me over. Then I might wanna bust while I fall from the bridge of London to pass all the lies and from which I come from. The drum, nitty drum, call on the father, cause I don't have no Santa ball on. Just a brick that a nigga just pitched, but I'm gonna hit the shit out the park and come into your mind at the dark. Keep it coming, here I come, the Holy One, back from Jerusalem again to look at what he done. Humbalistic, baba, baba, rubber, brote, hun. So act like you know and give me room, cause I'm the son. Compassion of God, 720 was the return of the Holy One, 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 return of the Holy One. The Holy One is finally returned. Yes, it's the return of the Holy One, 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 return of the Holy One. The Holy One is finally returned. Yes, check it out. You don't stop, attendee. You don't stop, a manny. You don't stop, a rocking horse. You don't stop. I heard somebody's talking naughty, naughty about me. They're getting too personal, don't even know my circle. I guess that simply means them on my dick. Wimpy, coming up empty. Dummy, funny, who the hell them think I'm harassing? I bump heads with the fucking nappy assassins. Pick the hook to beat up, be a nigga silly. When a nigga do
it's been a long time. Rocking the microphone solo with follow procedures. The crowd couldn't wait to see this. Nobody been this long awaited since Jesus. Who wouldn't believe this? I heard the word on the street is I'm still one of the deepest on the mic since Adidas. They said I changed the times from the rhymes that I thought of. So I made some order, put the new world in order. With mathematics, put your status above the average and help you rappers make paragraphs with graphics. Cause new days is dawning, new ways of performing. Brainstorming, I write and watch the night turn to morning. On and on and I got the whole world responding. Rock, I keep it hot, blow the spot without warning. The emperor, well known for inventing a sentence full of adventure, turning up the temperature, rush with adrenaline. How long has it been again to be in the state of mind that Rakim is in?
It's been a long time. Rakim, the microphone solo with. It's been a long time. It's been a long time. Rakim.
When I'm out popping, either hanging or shopping, people see me stopping, ask me when the album dropping. The wait is over, in formation like a soldier, like I told you. Greater, stronger, now that I'm older, I broke the code of silence with overloads of talents. My only challenge is not to explode in violence. I'm Asiatic,
Emblazing microphones a habit at least once during the course of a day. It's automatic and ghetto apparel. Mind of an Egyptian pharaoh, far from shallow. Thoughts travel like an arrow, a law's monotony. So far they can't stop me, you know. Raw on property like Omar Gaddafi. More thoughts than Bibles, recital, taught disciple. A sword off mic so words scatter like a rifle. Thoughts is trifle, I'm busting these for you. Hey yo, technical difficulties is through.
It's been a long time. Rocking the microphone solo. It's been a long time. Rocking the microphone solo. It's been a long time. Rocking the microphone solo. It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
When I flow at night, I show them new heights, I go to right. They know I strike with new prototypes to blow the mic. Critics and biters don't know where my source of light is. Still leave authors and writers with arthritis. Curse kids like the pyramids when they found the style. First to ever let a rhyme flow down the now. The rebirth for hip-hop will be dropped now, cause the crowd didn't hear the original in the wild. So be alarmed, what you about to see is the bomb. Like 3D and ARM, vivid like CD-ROM. Info kept like internet.com. My notebooks, my bond like the Holy Quran. Since I came in the door, said it before. But no, I ain't down with Eric B no more. At night, the open mic be inviting me to rhyme. So yo, I'm online, it's been a long time.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time. Rocking the microphone solo. It's been a long time. Rocking the microphone solo. It's been a long time. 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 It's been a long time.
Rakim, YZ. You know, it's kind of my theme because, excuse me, I've been away, but now I'm back, and I'm happy to be back. Like I said, it's James Baldwin's birthday, so we got to hear from.
Would you like, should like to, Mr. Baldwin, to comment on public education in America, especially with respect to blacks? Especially with respect to blacks. And especially why on this university is the black enrollment very low. I don't know if he can really respond to that or not, but just go ahead.
I'll do my best. I'll be given the public school situation, which I know more about. And that's a very difficult question to answer too. It's a difficult answer because first of all, it's you can't begin to answer without feeling terribly futile. And look, the truth is it's very hard to talk about education in this country without talking about the whole society in which it mainly fails to occur. You can hardly talk about schools, you know, without talking about cities. And the cities are in the hands of financiers. The cities are in the hands of pirates, thugs. And our children, are victims of the principles according to which the country is run. A country is not run according to the, you know, either the will of its citizens, I hope, or the good of its citizens, I know that, but for profit, for money, to make money. And education is a $1 billion industry. And the least important part of that industry is the child. I think this is a criminal, but this is the way it works. Now, the public education in the city in which I grew up, you know, is enough to break the heart, you know, enough to make you want to kill. And when we have tried, and we're trying again, and we've tried over and over and over again, to educate our children ourselves, to be responsible for the teaching, the curriculum, for the books, We did that for 3 years in New York some years ago, and the experiment succeeded for 3 years. And because it succeeded, it was crashed, it was smashed by the Board of Education, the Teachers Union, and Albany. You know, so that is what you're up against. Yeah, so you know what I'm talking. You know what I'm talking about. That's what one's up against. As for enrollment at this college, let's face it. Black people in this country have a terrible time just getting through 24 hours a day. it's absolutely true, you know. And education, it's hard to talk about education in a country in which literacy is adored. It's hard to talk about education in a country where people take seriously such a creature as John Wayne and Ronald Reagan. You know, it is. You know, I'm not trying to be funny. It's true. You know, and for a black person to get an education in this country, he's got to have a lot of guts, first of all, and to endure. I'm sorry, you know, I don't mean to be rude. But this institution is like many other institutions, and which means it's a racist institution.
No, amen.
There's no way around that. All the American institutions are racist. And to get an education under those circumstances is a tremendous act of the will. And also you risk schizophrenia. I'm not saying this because I think black people should not be educated, but I am saying that black people very largely educate themselves. What you have to do is pick up the tools, and with your own intention. You know, that's the trick.
James Baldwin on education. Hopefully I'll have some time to share some more insights from the ancestor. If you haven't read James Baldwin, I know the Black Straight Pride movement has a ban on gay writers. They don't want you reading Baldwin, and they don't want you reading Naeem Akbar or whatever. But I tell you, I recommend reading James Baldwin. I mean, the dude could write. And I'm not a nonfiction fan, so maybe I don't know, because I don't read a lot of literature. I don't read a lot of nonfiction. But so maybe my recommendations of nonfiction writer, maybe I just don't know what's out there. But whom I have read, you know, I've read most of like Toni Morrison, a lot of iconic writers, you know, a lot of the Harlem Renaissance writers, Native Sons, Black Boy, all that stuff. I've read that. And I've read Baldwin, a lot of his political essays, but some of his nonfiction. Dude could write, man. Dude could write. Anyway. Today's his birthday, of course, and he's part of what makes Black August, and we'll be dealing with some Black August icons and insights for the month of August. So happy Black August to us all. It's funny that he was speaking on education, because the Justice Department under Trump and Jeff Sessions have announced just this morning, punk ass. Man, first of all, Jeff Sessions, you a punk. You know, I wish I could say you a punk, man, because Trump was just going at dude, just calling dude out, telling him, you know, I would have hired somebody else if you was gonna recuse you. Just punking Jeff. And I said one thing I tell you about racists. Malcolm X said it back in the 60s. They some punks, they're cowards. Racists are the biggest punk cowards. Every single time you go on the internet, you'll see some dude step into some racist internet troll that was behind the keyboard, nigger this, nigger that, blah, 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 blah. And then they get ran up on. I'm sorry, you see that brother, that one brother that had the racist internet troll, white racist internet troll scream, "I love black people." I thought he'd explode if he'd say it. They should charge that brother with attempted homicide. He made that white racist scream, "I love black people," at the top of his lungs. That's attempted murder, because I sure thought that white dude was going to explode just saying the words. You know he didn't think it. But just saying those words, you think that killed the average racist. But, you know, back to the laboratory to find it. We find that we can check that off the list. But even when white boys like that Dylan Roof, when they ready to bust guns, when they ready to be martyrs for their cause, they said he was on his way to, like, to the hood. He was on his way to go someplace where, you know, brothers be at. You know, cats that could maybe give him a run for his money. And he stopped and was like, whoa, I don't want to ride on the hood. I ain't trying to ride up on no bros and no essays. I ain't trying to get shot back. So then he went to a church full of old people. So even when they ready to lash out in their full manifestation of their white aggression. And I ain't just talking about the Dylan Roofs. Look at the racist U.S. military. North Korea is like, boom, intercontinental ballistic missiles test. Bitches, what? Yeah, I'm gonna keep testing missiles. Nah, I'm not gonna sign no treaties. Nah, I'm not gonna sign on to the non-proliferation treaty. I don't wanna hear it. I'm gonna stay bombing. I'm gonna stay communist. I'm gonna stay doing my testing. I'm gonna stay throwing the middle finger up at your sanctions. I don't give a damn. And the US, like, well, we gotta figure out diplomatic, blah, 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 blah. They don't step to nobody that has the ability to fight back. They only invaded Iraq after 20 years of sanctions. After they knew they had drained Iraq of any capacity to fight back. Afghanistan don't even have a highway. The infrastructure in Afghanistan is literally from, what, the 17th century. It's literally, literally a backwards country. And not just because of their religious delusion, the theocratic nature of the state, but the literal infrastructure. Electricity, basic modern infrastructure is not there. That's who the U.S. will run up on with depleted uranium rounds, with laser-guided missiles and unmanned attack drones, with the trillion-dollar army. They take a trillion-dollar military and invade a country that has a GDP of like $30 billion. That's some punk. That's a punk move. That's a punk move. They some punks. Racists are punks. White supremacists are punks. They snakes. They don't beat you. They deceive you. They trick you into defeating yourself. They're very deceptive. I'm not saying they're stupid. But they ain't got no heart. So, yeah, you know, these Klan boys would dress up and rally together the day black folks figured, because for years they were like, the white man, God don't want us shooting back at white folks. So they lynched us. And the moment we're like, time to stop this lynching. And the white folks are like, damn, got to come with something else. These cops shooting children. These racist cops shooting 12-year-old kids in the back while hiding behind their car. Some punk stuff. The racists are punks. And Jeff Sessions is a racist and, by extension, a punk. And even let his own boss, any man that had any sense of dignity, self-respect. Jeff Sessions was a U.S. senator. Senators have really got more clout than the president. You could just see that with the Russian sanctions bill. They were like, look, we putting sanctions on Russia. And then, you know, it caught Trump by surprise. And we're like, what? No, I don't want to sanction on Russia. They were like, too bad. Senators serve longer terms than the president. They serve for 6 years. And the president only serves for four. So many of they've been around longer, more embedded and secure, and have more clout on Capitol Hill. So the Senate, the Congress, is infinitely more powerful than the Senate. I mean, the most powerful. I don't know. I'm not going to get into that. Let me just say. Ain't no way you a former U.S. senator and an attorney general and you got the president going around calling you out, pulling up your skirt, yanking at your slips, giving you wedgies and nurples and noogies. You're getting punked on the global stage and you're going, well, I serve at the dignity of the president. Punk. Racist, y'all some punks. Like Malcolm X said half a century ago, one of them never come after one of you. When they come for you, they come in with the overwhelming advantage, or they ain't coming at all. They come in with overwhelming advantage. I don't know why. I don't know why. But that's how they do. So anyway, Jeff Sessions was like, while the president's punking you, like I said, what I say about compounding, you always attacking down the scale, not up the scale. You're always doing descending aggression, not ascending aggression. So, you know, he took time off of persecuting immigrants. He took time off of being, you know, his Nazi-esque expulsion of the undesirable, the unclean, the unwashed. This white racist bigot piece of trash was like, I'm going to take a break from persecuting immigrants. And he turns his eye to racial justice. So Jeff Sessions says, there's a group that is suffering discrimination in America's education system. And he's going to use resources. He's going to take the budget of the Justice Department and the full weight of the executive branch and the judicial and the executive branch of the federal government to rescue these people who are suffering from racial discrimination. And who are the people I'm talking about in education? The people I'm talking about are white folks. Jeff Sessions, because ironically, and I think it was 2006. What was the name of that little ugly girl? That little ugly white girl that went to, I just had the name at the tip of my tongue. She went to the Supreme Court because she didn't get into some Texas school. And she said it's because of black folks. Those niggers are sitting in my classroom seat. And then it turns out she didn't have the grade. She didn't reach the requirement. And all the black people that she claimed took her seats meet and surpassed the requirements. So the black folks would have took it without affirmative action. But anyway, that's not the point. The court upheld, they said that affirmative action and racial set-asides were actually constitutional and consistent with the Constitution and the law, so that universities can't solely make decisions on admission based on race, but race is a legitimate factor to consider when determining admission standards. So affirmative action is still legal. And it's not mandated, but if a school chooses to do it, they have legal coverage. If they choose not to do it, then you can't mandate it either. And the court voted on this. I believe it was 5-7. There were only 7 justices that weighed in on this case. And the 2 standouts were, of course, Clarence Thomas. I don't know what y'all did to Clarence Thomas. Woo, Clarence Thomas. Hate black folks and don't even pretend. And I respect that. I don't like Obama, who pretend to be down with us while he screw us over. If you're going to hate me blatantly. Let me say that again. Hate me blatantly if you must hate me. Don't secret hate. Don't hate me behind my back. Don't sneak hate, because I give you that respect. If I don't like you, you don't have to try to guess at it. I'm not a person. I don't dislike many people. A lot of people who don't like me, I actually like. I found out to my own dismay that Mwalimu Baruti unfriended me on social media. And I assume because I'm not sufficiently anti-gay. Because my anti-gayness stops at me not participating in gay stuff. That's pretty much where my anti-gayness, but I don't discourage gays from doing their gay things. But I will not assume. And, you know, I read his book. And in fact, I got kind of, when I read, and I'm trying to get off the gay stuff, man. But I used to be like one of those staunch anti-gay cats. Like, it's not enough for me. If I'm anti-gay, it extended beyond me not engaging in homosexual acts. It extended. I had to go and discourage others and stop others and denounce the act. Now, I actually read, I was in California, and I read the entire book in like 2 days, The Effeminization of the Black Male by Mwalimu Baruti. And I'm like, there's really no rational, scientific, or even historical basis to anything in this book. And I'm like, wow, you know, I can't go around saying, you know, I promoting rationality and trying to infuse rationality into the larger struggle and trying to make ideology align with rationality and logic and reason, while still holding to irrational or unsubstantiated positions myself. So I had to readjust my position on the thing. And it was because the people who agree with me on this issue don't tend to make sense. And I'm thinking, huh, could it be that I'm not making sense or I'm not being fully rational? So then I had to do some readjustments. But anyway, let's get back to the issue of affirmative action. Affirmative action, even though it's legal, it ain't really, it's been around for decades, since the 60s. And it hasn't really led to any. There's a lot of black people that have gone into these institutions through affirmative actions. And Mose and Mosetta, that's what what Dr. Mackey, Professor William Mackey, used to call when he was referring to the black masses. He'd call us Mose and Mosettas, just overall and boot wearing black folks, non-fancy, non-lettered black folks. So he's like Mose and Mosettas. So, you know, in honor of him, of that great ancestors, I will start using that. When I say Mose and Mosetta, I'm talking about the black masses, the unwashed masses, the huddles, not the black elites, the black pseudo bourgeoisie, but all the rest of us who ain't got it like that, who ain't ringside or courtside, us who watch on TV or sit up in the nosebleed seats. Mose and Mosettas. Mose and Mosettas fought to get some of us into the institutions of higher learning. Send some Negroes to Harvard and get some good Negroes, some colored folks up into Brown and Berkeley. Get Negroes into the institutions of higher learning. Black people who could never have any damn chance of ever setting one toe in any of these schools, these elite Ivy League schools, who never stood a damn chance, fought so that their descendants, not even their own damn kids, but other people, black folks, we just wanted some black faces in them high spaces because we were under the impression that these black people would exit that place and create policies, build institutions, and utilize their education, their higher learning and skills and status and power for the betterment of the rest of us. We didn't know them Negroes would get up in there and be like, I'm here because I'm special and I'm willing to work hard. And any Negro that can work hard and is willing to work hard and sacrifice can get here, too. Like, Negro, you didn't get there from hard work. You got there from collective struggle, idiot. But the first black man to ever graduate from Harvard said that Harvard has ruined more Negroes than bad whiskey. We made a mistake. Hey, all praises due to Mose and Mosettas, to our ancestors. They didn't know. Many of these people were sharecroppers and mill workers. If they made it past the eighth grade, they had, you know, were lucky. Many of them had to leave school in the sixth grade to tend to family, to tend to farms and share crop land and to go get paying jobs to help bring in money to stop the family from starving. So they weren't the most educated people. They hadn't had the benefits of decades of political analysis, of active history like we have, to realize ain't no salvation coming from education. And to realize that a lot of these, just because a Negro is educated, don't mean they're going to use that education for the betterment of the people. At best, they might use it for their own personal betterment. At worst, they will use it to legitimize and sustain the systems and institutions of white supremacy. It is what it is. It is what it is. But anyway, white folks, rednecks, I don't know, was that here? I think last time I was on the show, I was giving y'all the difference between a redneck and a hillbilly. And I was mostly joking, but people were like, wait, break that down further. So then I had to go and invent some technical explanation for making fun of white folks. I was just making fun of white folks, but y'all wanted, like, hey. So I basically said that a redneck is a southern hillbilly, and a hillbilly is a Midwestern redneck. But these hillbillies and rednecks are really like, I'm not going to Harvard because the niggers are all in Harvard. And they're mad as hell. Because Rufus really think if it wasn't for affirmative action, his ass would be sitting in Brown. He would be, you know, laying on the quad at Berkeley, playing an acoustic guitar and sleeping with women from various ethnic groups. That was his life, and some Mose or Mosetta, some brother then booted him and moved in there and stopped him from getting in that spot. So they want to bum rush us. And Jeff Sessions, that damn fool, punk ass Jeff Sessions, is going to protect, use literally, he's going to use our tax dollars to protect white people from racial discrimination. Literally. I'm not making this up. Go to CNN or any of the other, the Wall Street Journal. The Trump administration, this is CNN, the Trump administration is readying resources in the Justice Department Civil Rights Division for the purpose of investigating and litigating quote-unquote race-based discrimination in U.S. higher education, potentially with the aim of protecting white applicants from discrimination through affirmative action. The New York Times reported this on Tuesday. CNN just did it yesterday. According to the internal document obtained by the Times, the Justice Department Civil Rights Division is looking for lawyers to work on investigations and possible litigation related to intentional race-based discrimination in college and university administrations. Now, they can't even find lawyers that will litigate this. They're looking. I'm sure they're going to find some Better Call Saul lawyer. That's what. But, you know, the lawyer's got to be like, I intend to have a job after the Trump administration. Because he might be impeached. He's definitely going to only serve one term. So they're like, do I want to go to the justice? So they're looking for lawyers. So more than like, so what's more than likely going to happen is Jeff is going to have to go to the Justice Department and handpick some lawyers. Like, there are a lot of racist lawyers out here, but lawyers are taught to think in the abstract. They can think, well, damn, you know, if I take this case, I'll be a laughingstock in the legal profession. And I don't want to expose my racist hand. By the time you get up to law school, you want to be, you've learned how to well disguise your racism. You know, but Jeff Sessions is saying that, hey, it's safe for racists to be naked, open racist again. We don't have to be dog whistle racist. We can be, you know, open and direct racist. But then they're finding out, maybe not. Maybe it's not as safe as we thought it would be to be open and direct races. So that's that. So y'all black folks, our recess is over for black people. All the wonderful that we had, Trump is going to stop. All the, you know, buying Cadillacs with food stamps and being able to go to any university of our choice, booting a white person and taking from white people, those days are over. Jeff Sessions is here to rescue the white race from black college applicants. You know, it's funny to me because, look, Trump and his administration told white folks, we're going to bring back jobs. We're going to make America great again. They're failing at that. All of Trump's entire platform. Remember, he said he was going to bring back coal jobs, and he put that guy. I can't remember this Confederacy of dunces, this rogues gallery. But anyway, he executive order. He hasn't passed any legislation, not one piece of legislation. So he's ruling by executive order. And he's a rich white man. Like Obama, when Obama had to rule by executive order, he's a black dude who come from relatively humble roots. He's balling out now after 8 years of dedicated service to the corporate elite, to the Zionists and every other scumbag in the world. After loyal service to them, now he's going to live high on the hog now. But going into the office, he's living in Hyde Park, man. You know, that ain't too far from my hood. So he wasn't all he was comfortable, or as Bernie Mac and several other black, he was nigger rich, but he wasn't white folks rich. Now he's white elite rich, you know. But anyway, Trump, what's your excuse? You ain't black. You born rich. So he's ruling by executive order. And he's not able to keep any of his promises. And unlike black people, when Obama failed us, we loved Obama as he screwed us over, failed us, lied to us, and served every other interest group besides us. We still loved him. I don't know if white folks got that kind of love. That, what they call, guapo, I don't know, the pure love, the unconditional love. There's some Latin term for it. I can't think of it. Sounds like agave, though. But anyway, this love, like white folks, they are like, I think white folks are more willing to turn on Trump than the Obamites are willing to turn on Trump. So Trump is like, one thing I can do is beat up on scapegoat. That's what Trump's going to do. Trump's like, scapegoating got me here, so scapegoating is going to keep me here. You know what a scapegoat was? When people would send their animals out to pasture, and there were predatory animals all around. So they would take one goat and like tie it to a post. So if a coyote or wolves came and attacked the, they would attack the herd, then the scapegoat would be there. And when, and so that goat would be sacrificed so that the other goats could get away. And it generally was a sickly goat or, you know, an old goat that was too old to produce milk or anything. It was a sick goat or an old goat. A goat, the most vulnerable goat would be sacrificed so that the healthier goats could run and get away. And so, and of course, predatory creatures, they go after the low-hanging fruit. You know, it's not easy hunting and stuff, so they don't want to injure themselves or risk injury. Plus, you can get shot. Plus, they got the guard dogs or the sheep dogs there. So he's like, okay, it was a good compromise. It was a good system. It worked. It worked so well, we even, humans adapted it. So scapegoating is you take a vulnerable population, a sick, a hounded, oppressed population, and you turn them over to the wolves. Who are the wolves? The white masses. The white masses are angry. I don't have a job. You know, I can't afford to pay my trailer park fees. I damn near don't have enough money for my NASCAR and wrestling tickets. And of course, white people aren't going to say, well, it's the capitalism is the reason. You know, it's because in there were socialist reforms and there was established a social safety net and there was progressive taxation so that wealth couldn't concentrate in too few hands and we could develop an oligarchy. You know, they're not going to sit down and have this rational explanation as to why ain't white folks balling out like they used to. Why don't white folks have the money and status that they used to have? And they could easily see anybody who bothers to be honest to say, well, it's the white elite. It ain't black folks. It ain't immigrants. It ain't the gays and the ungodly atheists. You know, it's not any of the people that the average white person blames for their problems. It's totally not the problem. And the white people, you white folks, elected the very people who did this to you. Y'all elected. And it ain't just, and it's not just, it's not just the rednecks and the hillbillies. It's you sophisticated WASP too. You white folks who need to know the difference between a dinner fork and a salad fork. Y'all do it too. Y'all scapegoat too. So only thing it is, you identify vulnerable, you like, and here's the kicker. The sheep herder who's protecting the flock is the number one threat to the flock. He's the one to put your ass in the pen, who bred you to be fat and lazy and stupid when you should have been in the hills, mountain goat, mountain billy goats. And, you know, goat is a powerful, sheep is a powerful creature until it got domesticated and lazy and stupid. So, you know, it's. I mean, I'm mixing up my analogy. Are we the sheep or the white folks the wolf? What is going on? We everything. We everything is everything. What will be after winter must come. Quote Lauryn Hill. When in doubt, quote Lauryn Hill. So anyway, these white masses are not going to blame the white elites. They're going to elect the very people who put them in this position to rescue them this position by attacking the people who had nothing to do with this position that they're in. That's scapegoating. It's very effective. It's very, very, very effective. So white folks ain't balling like they used to ball. They ain't living like they used to live. They ain't got what they used to have. And they're mad. Even though they still have way more than they deserve, but that's another discussion. And so you come to me and say, I know who's the problem. And the problem, your problem, are people who are weaker, less subhuman, unworthy. They're terrible people. The people who are against you are, and they're weaker than you. Who wouldn't? If I had to have an enemy, I would want an enemy that's weaker than me. If I had, I would prefer to have no enemies. But they were like, everybody has to have an enemy. Of course, who doesn't? Like, some of y'all may be hardcore. Y'all see a lineup of goons, and you'll pick the biggest goon out of the pack. But I'm intelligent. I'm going to say, well, if I have to have beef with somebody and I'm able to pick who I have beef with, pick the smallest cat in the lineup. I'm like, I'll fight him. And being the smallest cat in my own crew, I know what that's like. I know it's not fair, but it's rational. It makes sense. But unfortunately, we don't get to pick our enemies. I was born into this ongoing conflict. This conflict predates me, this racial conflict. So I wasn't able to say, who do I want to fight? My enemies were already the elite, the oppressor, racist. My elites had already established themselves before I was even born. So I don't get to pick my enemies. But if I was allowed to, if I had to. So white folks play the same game. White folks, your enemy is the white elites. Always have been. They sending you off to war. They're polluting, giving your kids sarcoma and all these weird diseases from so they can generate profit and destroy the ecosystem. And they're the ones who set up these corrupt financial problems, who shipped your jobs overseas or bring in immigrants to give your jobs. Ain't nobody took your job. Your job has been given away by rich white folks, not taken by poor brown folks, you dummies. But you're not going to bum rush them. So they're going to come and tell you, no, it's these unwashed, these horrible, horrendous, unworthy, lazy. And you're white people are only people. I don't understand how you can say we're lazy and we've got all the jobs. How? We're in school. We're taking all the best schools. We're kicking you out of Ivy League schools to go to Ivy League schools. We're taking your jobs and we're lazy. You got to pick one. You got to pick one. We can't be lazy and that damn busy at the same time. Which one? Which stereotype you going to fall on? But yeah, hey, I'm white. I don't have to pick. I take it all. You're lazy, busy, hardworking people who took all the jobs, have all the money, and you're poor in the ghetto. You have nothing and you're taking everything. Even Trump on the campaign trail was like, black people, you have nothing. And now you're literally, Trump is literally investing resources into stopping us from taking everything after he the one that said we ain't got nothing. How, Sway? Anyway, just more nonsense. But let me quote Winston Churchill. He said, one thing about Americans, you can always depend on Americans to do the right thing after they've exhausted every other option. But we'll unpack that more Friday. I think I might have a guest. I need to make a phone call. I might have an in-studio guest. Anyway, Bro Diallo Show, AM16, Q4 Radio, AM16.8. Shout out to James Baldwin. Shout out to Lil Duval. And shout out to the rest of y'all. Peace. African World Order, www.africanworldorder.com, African World Coalition, hashtag AWC, and DiallaKenyatta.com. Go join, become a patron, make donations, help keep the show afloat. Peace.